This is Susan Schwartz, The Handless Maiden, Betrayal of and by the Father, June 6, 1992. Tape 2 of 4, which is the first of the three workshop tapes.
C.G. Jung Society, Seattle, Saturday, June 6, 1992. Susan Schwartz speaks today on the betrayal of and by the Father. This workshop explores the psychological ramifications of the absent father for men and women. Myths, the Handless Maiden, fairy tale, as we heard June 5 by Susan. The life and situations elucidate the damaging effects of the missing father and the subsequent steps toward healing.
But maybe that's nice because we can all yak a lot, hopefully. Let me kind of begin with a quote, which I think relates to the father. And this is also from Martin Buber, again, who writes some very interesting, nicely quotable things. "Shall I not be bitter against the signature of this age? Do you not know the king who has installed these satraps? He is the same one who has stifled the power of realization in the bands of contemporary men. It is inborn in all of them in some strength, with some drive, and in all of them it does not attain to its height, and is hemmed in and destroyed and degraded. But the fact is that the power of realization cannot be injured by any earthly need or necessity. The only force which can attack and oppress it is the predominance of orientation. And that is the predominance that has insinuated itself into the blood of our age and dissolved its reality in order to put in its place its own appearance. For before all other ages of civilization, ours is the age that does not realize." And so then, we might kind of begin with maybe our kind of a discussion or a sharing of what really is the concept of the father. Yes. You want me to read it again? It's a bit pithy, isn't it? All right. Also, I must say that you can read it afterwards, too. Okay, I mean, I have this piece of paper, so you can surely read it, but I'll read it again. And again, why I chose this is I think it reflects this father principle that has been predominant psychologically as well as culturally. "Shall I not be bitter against the signature of this age? Do you not know the king who has installed these satraps? He is the same one who has stifled the power of realization in the bands of contemporary men. It is inborn in all of them in some strength, with some drive, and in all of them it does not attain to its height, and is hemmed in and destroyed and degraded. But the fact is that the power of realization cannot be injured by any earthly need or necessity. The only force which can attack and oppress it is the predominance of orientation. And that is the predominance that has insinuated itself into the blood of our age and dissolved its reality in order to put in its place its own appearance. For before all other ages of civilization, ours is the age that does not realize." Yes. Well, we might say, have we not all experienced the predominant orientation of the masculine principle? So if we apply it to what we are talking about today, and within that, the predominance of the father. Have we? Again, this today is a discussion. It isn't me presenting all the material. So would you agree that we have a predominance of orientation of the masculine father principle, do we? How does it come out? How have we experienced it? Do you have an idea? Anybody? Yes? Right. Yeah, I think so. I think so. Clarence Thomas hearing. Oh, right. That's a good example, wasn't it? And those are interesting too, because he also was under the gun of the predominant father or patriarchal principle, which is white. And so I think he was experiencing the same thing that she was in a different kind of way. Wasn't he? I don't know. At any rate, it leaves room for thought, right? I think what's interesting about that you mention is how many people that I noticed had so many dreams during that time about Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill. It was an incredible amount to me. And the other time when I had seen that was, do you remember that horrendous murderer, Bundy, who was executed? Oh, he's from here, excuse me. Well, they grow them like that in Arizona too, I must say. But that also, at that time, people experienced lots in the dream. So here we have the male father or the masculine principle that's, you know, kind of coming forth in a very destructive kind of way. But how might we describe the father? I mean, if we're kind of going to get into this, how might we describe him? What would we say his qualities are? I mean, that's how you look at an archetype. Kind of say, all right, what are the qualities that the father archetype carries? What is he carrying? Culturally, personally, family? How could we give him some life and describe him? Dominant. Okay, so we could say dominant. What else would we say? A thinker. Okay. Authoritarian, right. How about disciplinarian? Yes? Yes. Right. Masculine image. What did you say? Or they're both and. They probably run together. The other thing is that today I have a couple of people that I will give as examples, and we'll kind of go through their dreams and see what the father is and how he is portrayed for them particularly. But I must say that many of the people that I work with would describe father in quite a negative light: absent, unemotional, distant, strict, not relating, doesn't play with them. These are all quite negative images in a way. And then, in kind of balance to that a little bit, yesterday when I was on the plane, this father and son sat down next to me and obviously had this really lovely relationship. And I'm more used to people who have not lovely father-son relationships. And we talked about it, and they were really, I think, an example of a father and a son. The son was maybe about 20 or so, and the father in his 40s, I guess. And they had worked through a lot of things. It hadn't been easy, but now they had good emotional connection. They talked with each other. We talked about dreams. They commented about each other and how they worked out their differences. But before this, there had been a period of separation that was quite extreme and for quite a long time. On the other hand, they're now able to talk, come together, and work it out. And that ideally is what we would hope would happen by understanding the father. And what happened with the father was that he had not had a father. His own father had been absent, had been involved in alcohol, had not been emotional, and he said to himself, I'm not going to be this kind of a father. So, of course, he had become alcoholic and had been distant and then got his act together and started to be a different kind of a father. So that's really what we're after and kind of describing the archetype is to see where it's influenced us and then how we might change it or take it another step and work with it. So we kind of have these, we've described some of this archetype of the father, but what about qualities like, what about like Zeus? I mean, he's a father image, isn't he? Zeus, you know, in the Greek pantheon, what is he? Strong? Powerful, right? Charismatic, absolutely. Lots of women. Unpredictable, for sure. Yes, lightning bolts too, right? Thunder. Moody. Yes, well, he sure was, wasn't he? Moody, right. Because he had a bad marriage. Why would you say it was bad? You have a point, but why? Right. Yeah, he wasn't exactly what you would call faithful. And he also did not work out his difficulties with her, did he? I mean, how related really was he? Not so related. And everybody was in his power. If he decided he wanted to have sex with you, that was it. You know, you have no way to get away from him. You can change into a tree, you can change into a cow, a bird, anything. It doesn't make any difference at all. He will still persist. So one is always under his control. I think you mentioned the church too. So we have the masculine God image in our Western culture, who is portrayed as what? Judgmental. Harsh. Pardon me? Fearful. Omniscient. We don't get too much relatedness in this father, do we? Or where's the kindness? Where is the embracing? Where is the love? Where is the ease or the comfort or the feeling of camaraderie? Is he around? Have we missed him? I mean, I'm sure we have missed these qualities, but could we find an image who would carry a father image or part of the father archetype that would embody that? What about in other cultures? And I bet everybody here comes from its different cultural backgrounds. What about some of the myths in your cultural backgrounds that talk about the father? Father time. Yes, who is a giver and also a taker away. Yes, because father time also is the deaf, right? So again, quite powerful. Hero and protector, right, right. Because we didn't mention that protecting kind of place. I think that's important with the father, that he really can be a protectorate and can really help out. A provider, right. He provides oftentimes so that the family can survive, so the family unit will have enough money, so that there will be a roof over the head. So that's also a very important kind of quality. What other kind of symbols could we come up with that would relate to the father? symbols in our daily life that would relate to Father. But like any kind of symbols that would relate to the Father. Procreator. Mm-hmm. Like what? Trees. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very much. Pyrasis. Uh-huh. Right, the whole phallic image, yes. Yes. Why?
It brings things from justice to us in a sincere way, how to just read the list of images.
Yes, on the other hand, what you're describing is a conveyor of information. However it comes off, it is a conveyor of information. You describe it invasively, but still there is this, that the information is brought from one place to another.
I think
the
great.
Very great. Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I think
uh-huh. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Also, Father is sometimes associated with fatherland. Isn't he? We'd say the fatherland. Now, is America a country that says fatherland? I don't think so. It isn't motherland either. Is it? Do we call... But you're right. Of opportunity, but it's not really mother or father. There's a lot of countries where exploitation. Mm-hmm. Right. But not really of the too young to be into the father. Right. Right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You're correct. But given the Native American culture, how might we add to this father archetype? How would the father? Pardon me.
Father sky.
Father sky. Right. The heavens. Absolutely. The sun also. Right. So we're getting a few more kind of images, huh? Yes. Right. Right. Okay. Our founding fathers, who then are the father then as a beginner, or as an innovator, in a way, or as a leader.
Our heritage comes through our
father. The heritage.
That sort of, in the name of the father, the name.
Patrilineal is what it is, right? Right, it's patrilineal. Well, it has been generally patrilineal. Maybe we don't have to go along with that completely, but it has generally been that the name is passed on through the father, and one has to keep the father's name in a good way, etc. Yeah. Maybe also the world of business is a father place too. One passes, sometimes the business is passed on from father to son or maybe daughter too. Mm-hmm.
When you asked about symbols, the first thing that came to my mind was a car.
A car?
Because it was other way of getting around. The father was the one that goes out of the house. I mean, that's culturally, American cultural idea that was planted in us still. He goes out into the rest.
Right. So then we might say that the father world is out of the family. The home is maybe the mother world, the father world is out of the family. And oftentimes, when the child is born, the child is closest to the mother parent. And the father parent starts to, or that father role, starts to come in when the child gets a bit more independent and can go out in the world or lead the child out into the world. And I say father parent or mother parent because I don't know that it has to be the mother who does the mothering or the father who does the fathering. It depends on what qualities one has inside oneself, where you're most comfortable. Any other symbols that we might think of in relation to father, or what countries have a fatherland?
Germany.
Germany, right. The Führer, right? I mean, Hitler is the father or the leader to the max, huh? Fatherland, right. Mm-hmm. I was thinking Russia, but Russia's usually the motherland, isn't it? With the symbol of the bear. What animals might come along with the father? Lion, the king of the forest. Uh-huh. Rams. Why rams?
Even before I first living ones, I ever saw the Canadian rocks, because just usually are up on a rock, overseeing
and overlooking, also as qualities. The overseeing and overlooking. But I think, too, in the Old Testament, that's why I was asking about the ram, because I think that Abraham, as the father, took Isaac and was going to sacrifice him because the Father God was saying, do this to show that you are loyal to me. And then he saw, I think it was a ram that was in the bushes, and that ram was sacrificed rather than Isaac being sacrificed. So there might be something that's kind of connected up with that. Mm-hmm. Serpent or snake, is that the father? Not in your book. How did you come to it? It feels like it to you. Uh-huh. I think one of the thing about symbols that's so interesting is, for you, it relates to the father. For somebody else here, it doesn't at all. It's like, how did you get to that? You know? And so, again, we have to go by that symbol and what it means to you. So when you have a snake in your dreams, you know, it very well might be the father. Somebody else does, and they say, mm-mm, it's not the father for me. So, a dog. Uh-huh. Well, the dog is usually described as man's best friend, but the dog with the father. Would anybody else agree with that? You would. All right. Okay. So we have. Yes. A rooster. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay. Look at what interesting kind of individual the animals kind of bring out how one would relate to the father. Uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. Well, they're fatherly in an individual way. They're capable of being father depending on what's going on inside of the person and how one associates with it. They're not, you're right, some of them are really not father symbols per se, but have that possibility of expanding into that depending on the personal experience. So, for instance, I think somebody had mentioned the tree, which really is father and mother both, right? The father's kind of overarching protection, or the roots that go underneath, and mothering in different kind of aspects. So, again, the archetype gets mixed up with the personal, which is really makes it live. That's what makes it live. So we have this kind of general father archetype made up of symbols of animals or nature or buildings or our life or our culture, And yet the ones that apply specifically to us are also the ones that are incredibly important. Let me kind of read you something that Jung has said about the father here. All right, I'm going to show this. Let me just get my papers kind of connected here. Okay. All right, Jung says, the potentialities of the archetype for good and evil alike, now he's speaking of archetype in general, the potentialities of the archetype for good and evil alike transcend our human capacities many times, and a man can appropriate its power only by identifying with the daimon, by letting himself be possessed by it, thus forfeiting his own humanity. This would be really getting involved in the archetype. And then he goes on to say, the fateful power of the father complex comes from the archetype, and this is the real reason why the consensus gentium, or our general consensus, puts a divine or daimonic figure in the place of the father. He's either one or the other. The personal father inevitably embodies the archetype, which is what endows his figure with its fascinating power. The archetype acts as an amplifier, enhancing beyond measure the effects that proceed from the father, so far as these conform to the inherited pattern. In other words, we're all born with this inheritance of what is the father archetype. And then the personal father will accentuate it in different kinds of ways. Our experience of the personal father will accentuate it differently. And then he goes on to say that, in my experience, it is usually the father, this is interesting, in my experience, it is usually the father who is the decisive and dangerous object of the child's fantasy. And happened to be the mother, I was able to discover behind her a grandfather to whom she belonged in her heart. Something else I wanted to read here. Oh, we frequently meet with cases where the father demon has laid his hand upon his daughter, so that her whole life long, even when she does marry, there is never a true inward union, because her husband's image never succeeds in obliterating the unconscious and continually operative infantile father ideal. This is true not only of daughters, but also of sons. You know, I think that, I don't know about you, but I was a little struck and wondered that if we had started on the mother, or if we were talking about the mother, might there have been quicker associations? That as we began, it was like, well, so what is the father? And we had to kind of pull it out. I think it shows that really we have all lived, although we live in a patriarchal culture in the Western world, the father has really been very absent. It's a paradox. It's a very strong influence, and yet why does it take us a while to come up with a definition or an expansion of the father archetype?
Last night you said something about the absence of the father, that we look at, we then form a father from the form in this viewpoint. Have we done that? Because the father is external.
Right.
Well, we think it's there, but the way we identify it is through
the eyes,
right,
right. Now then, what does that do if we take it in a generational way? How does the father get an image of himself as a father other than through the eyes of the mother who is maybe going to have a distorted image of the masculine, right? You follow me? Look at how convoluted it is. And then we look backward in our own personal history. How have the fathers acted? We look in our lives. How is the father acted? And we look, what are we passing on about father, fathering? And whose eyes are we using? Are we using our own? Are we using mother's matriarchy? Are we using father's patriarchy? It's tricky. Because unconsciously, we are going to be probably doing all of that. Right? The more conscious we become, the more we're going to put out a truer kind of an image and a truer kind of relationship to the father. It will get more real. But of course, one has to become conscious in order to do that.
What I wanted to do when you first asked me about fathering, all my mind said, well, I'm here, supposed to be masculine. You know, I have a lot of images and energies for understanding what is masculine. But as far as putting out what is father, I tend to think specifically of my individual father and fathering that I've seen through my family gathering.
Mm-hmm.
And now you ask to think of where it all comes from. What I want to do is I want to recreate it myself, what father is.
Mm-hmm.
By what I have seen, as well, but mostly by what I feel is, well, from lovers and past relationships with men, all the way up from being a child on up, what I would like to, who I would like to follow my children, and what that would mean. Definitely scared me when you say that, yes, look at the image from mother's point of view. It's often, it makes me feel very responsible as a woman for what has been given to the image of father.
Right. That's exactly right.
That makes me want to change it.
Because maybe in some ways it has not been given truly. Right. Can't have, because the woman, I mentioned this last evening, the woman can never be totally conscious of the masculine side of herself, because it's always in the unconscious. The animus, in whatever form that masculine figure is going to take, will always stay somewhat unconscious. So that the true image of what is male cannot be put out by a woman. As close as a woman could get to it, it still eludes her. The man will speak about it from a different place. I notice that frequently when I work with people, how men talk about being men. I always ask them, you know, what is, not always, but when it comes up, I mean, what does it mean to be a man, or what is that really about, you know? Current question. It's a good question. And they come up with these great things that I would never think about. I couldn't think about, you know. Well, you know, some of them are actually not so nice about it. They will say, men are not related. I don't have men as friends. You can't really talk to a man. You can talk to a woman much better. That men get together around this classical sports, or and yet there's something else about men being, whether they were forced to or not, feeling really comfortable in the world. Feeling like they belong, feeling like they have a place, feeling like it's natural to develop, feeling like they don't have a conflict around children and home and dishes and responsibilities, etc. Not feeling diffuse, feeling clear about where they're going. Which I think differently happens for women. As well as to get in touch with father is difficult for men, but also difficult for women, and I think in different kinds of ways. I was struck a bit about what you were saying and wondered if at the end of our day today, we might see if we've added anything onto father, if we've kind of been able to expand onto that, see if there's anything more we've come up with. Yeah.
And I think that as far as the one thing that struck me was, you know, we've got to know how to say. But I really think that this comfort that women feel about what is their place, particularly when you talk about the home, of course, helps to do
that.
And even if I was born there was a great expectation that I would be done and have to learn and be done with it.
Oh, be done with it?
Done with
it, meaning
my invitation.
Oh, I see.
I'd become a mother, I'd become a wife, and that would be my life.
Right.
And to be done with it, that would be my goal, to be established at that point.
Uh-huh.
And you'd be more able.
You would then be done with... Right, you would be done with your development in the world, in a way. Mm-hmm. And that's the difference, or that's one of the differences.
That seems true. But, well, to me personally, it was considerable to why I didn't do it. But it still was a question. I mean, I recently asked my woman niece about that. And her parents were about 20. And they're very interested. And there seems to be almost a backlash.
Right. No. And because they see what? That it's too difficult. It's going to bring too much conflict. They've really, in a sense, kind of gone back. But what has that then done to their own development of the father spirit inside of them? Or the father principle inside of them? If they kind of roll back to doing it the way people used to do it, then what have we gained, have we? I wonder. Because I think you're right. I think that has happened a lot. We see a lot of this kind of backlash. On the other hand, is that part of growth? That there has to be a going back before we move forward, or as we...
And I really think that the thing is, I see things happening in a more convoluted way, and I think getting back to origins, that kind of thing, in a circular movement, is really meaningful. We thought about getting it from them. That's the generic, the circular one. It's getting, my mind is getting to the interior, getting to the depth, but we're getting to all some kind of linear progression. And I think that.
Well, it's a big question, but does anybody else have a comment about what she has said?
I think she was I don't see any more that we can. It might look like it, but I don't see, going back to something that might work partially. But I think that our sense is great. We're awesome. So, I don't think all of them will go back to the way. I think there will be many members who will like that of all of them. It's not so difficult for all of them to have a broader life in the sense. I think what we're learning is how to manage.
I think it might be also this kind of mixing and making kind of new definitions so we don't get caught in progress or this kind of, as you said, moving forward, but that would include a more circular kind of way so that we could have maybe the both and kind of experiences rather than having to be only one way of being. The other thing is that as we do move in whichever direction, that's going to affect the unconscious. So whatever movement there is, will always affect the unconscious. And so that will change in the unconscious. And then the unconscious will then promote change in the consciousness. You know, Jung's kind of this whole theory of the archetypes, different archetypes defining male and female are coming up that maybe were not around X amount of years ago, but we're around in a different way 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago, and so we are bringing them up yet again. That's why I had mentioned at the beginning, what is the father in the culture for our current time versus how he might have been at another time versus Zeus versus this, so we can kind of lay them out to be able to see what's going on with us right now. As well as this kind of debate of whatever is masculine or feminine, which of course would have to come up when we talk about the father. I think too that whatever is going on in the feminine principle is going to affect the masculine. Whatever going on with women or the women that choose to stay at home or whatever they're doing is going to affect the men. It's got to, because we each affect each other. But did anyone else have a comment in relation to what she had said?
I like the circle thing, and I think it's the spiral, because for me, what works for me right now is that when you work in the spiral, each circle is a little bit further from the center before. The center is the origin, and everything that has been there then can feed out and incorporate what's been before.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a few more distance, but it's still part of it. And so, and I think what the race to me was happening to different people is wherever they are at on the next circle around, different things they latch on to, everybody latch on to the same thing. So
right.
It's part of the own experience.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I was wondering if these 20-year-old women who wish to mother aren't up to the challenge of mothering and fathering, whether this is the model within themselves that they feel that they are up challenge of doing, or either in themselves putting to them their mate, father, a new model of relatedness.
Uh-huh.
So that the challenge is, I am to have a child, we are to have a child, and my father wasn't born, but was not children of the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
So they have had several father role parenting models. And I wonder if there's a good degree, and I actually assume that there's a good degree of women growing up that have within them their own soul the ability to restructure the important relationship of mother and father, that one is neither more or less than the other.
Anybody have an idea or comment about it? Yes, go ahead.
Well, I'm not sure I knew there was a pulling helper, but I think also there was a disappointing thing is my discovery that there's still an expectation around the people in there that really require the human. In other words, there's a sense of yes, I've gone with a master's an MBA or volunteer, but ultimately a man will be terrible. And I think after all these years maybe bringing from the core of trying to shatter that notion that there's still that clinging to the idea that it doesn't really matter what I do, when I get there, I'm hopeful.
Or we might translate it and say, well, that's maybe the search for the father who then protects and will take care of, maybe because the father didn't, or the father is supposed to, or the father inside has not been developed. But you're correct, there's a lot, and I think it creates a lot of struggle inside of people. Even these ones who say, well, I'll get an MBA and then it doesn't really make so much difference, etc. There's still this kind of struggle, and I think the struggle shows, at least in some of them, the struggle shows there's some kind of need or desire somewhere for how can I do it? Yes?
What I was just sensing with this telling something is that with this plurality of parents, as both, I mean, the more
mothers and fathers.
Mothers and fathers, that there's a bias in the impact of the archetypal parent as the all powerful. Somehow that emphasis and what needs to be sorted out. The therapy process then becomes a place for that gets to account, because there isn't a sense of really stability at all encompassing that the archetypal level for life. And so when it comes to pushing back into the archetypal, it has a lot of potential for the development of that in itself.
Right.
Because I think that the fragment of the expression of the community really is
as well as when there has not been a personal experience of the father, then one is taken over by perhaps too much of the archetype, or could fall into it too much, therefore getting back to that protectorate father, no matter what degree somebody has got, that they wouldn't really live out their lives, but would kind of live within that kind of thing around them and never really, and look, not develop it within. That it becomes not a personal kind of development, but kind of living out of the archetype without a personal connection. Right. 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 And then that becomes very difficult, because oftentimes the one who has not been around is the father. It kind of generally, okay, it's not always, but generally has not been around. And so then he lives on some kind of pedestal up here until actually it can take quite a long time to peel off the illusion that there was a father, there was relatedness. And with the peeling off of the illusion comes a great deal of disappointment or of sorrow or of anguish. Or then someone was saying the other day in relation to their father that they had really put into father, it was like blowing into a balloon, had made the father the father. And no longer blowing into the balloon, there wasn't any father. And I wonder how much we tend to do that in the absence of the father figure or in the absence of the father model. And then do we somehow, in one way, jump up to this archetypal or idealized level, fall into it, and then when we start to take it away, what do we have? We probably have some kind of a father, but we certainly don't have what we have imagined him to be.
We have a wounded.
We have a wounded one. Right. Right. Yes.
A human being never can be the archetype. If you talk about the young woman who has not experienced father, and then they wait for this great child to come, you said, to take care of him. No man in real life can be the archetype. So it's not about expectation.
It is, and what happens is that with this person that I gave you as an example of kind of blew into the balloon of the father, making him into some kind of an archetype in a way, by not no longer blowing into the balloon of father, realized that he must do it himself. Not must, had the ability, could develop it.
But if that realized, it's fine. In many cases, never realized, and then it comes into nature, it comes to the same.
Exactly right. That is true. Yes?
Yeah, but I think there's another side to it. I think it is a tremendous burden, an unrealistic burden to take on men, to become this father figure. On the other hand, I think it's a source of power for men to have women believe them.
Yeah.
Because then men become victims, you become dependent, you become concerned for it, you become, they look up to, they become vacuous, they look to be killed, and then who take advantage of that, they don't.
What that does then is it promotes a certain very structured, rigid way, doesn't it, of being. The lack of realization means one falls into old patterns and doesn't get to move on or build one's personality. So it's the falling into the old patterns, which means that one's going to be up and one's going to be down. Both are, in a sense, in a power position. But it's a very unequal kind of power position, each playing off the other, but it's all unconscious. That's the problem. Yes?
But in this culture, I think we're in a very difficult situation. Out in the world, there's not much permission for men to participate in parenting.
Right.
And for women to be out in the world, there is an expectation that you are away a lot in the business world, and you're away a lot or you're on a model trip.
Right.
Which is not particularly fulfilling place to be for many women to take that lesser role.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not much of a cultural embracing of the family. And so it sets up this split that women have to choose more. And maybe this is opening Pandora's box, but I think this is one of the ways in which the feminist movement has undermined the feminine, has undermined women in creating this kind of dichotomy. That if you follow the mommy track, which is to bring in your feminine into your creativity in your world, that somehow you're less there.
Mm-hmm.
And women have done this to themselves. And I'm sure, I know the men in the corporate world and in the business world have done this, have colluded or gone along with it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's something in the feminist movement that has contributed to this.
Yeah, but you know, I think it's again this kind of cycles that we have to go through, where we go too far on one side, and then we come back on the other, and then we kind of swing from one to the other, kind of, and in that way develop what is happening. But there always has to be an extension from one side, and then it's going to go, right? And then it's going to go back, and then it's going to go this. And so when we're on this side, we can easily say, oh, look, this is not okay, and then we can try to pull it back. Then we can say, oh, this is not right, and then we try to pull it back, therefore adding much more consciousness, I think.
Well-worn track.
Pardon me? A well-worn track. Yeah, I mean, this kind of spiral, cyclical kind of experience, you're shaking your head. It's not well-worn. Why do you say that?
It has to be rediscovered. Every individual has to rediscover it. For him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not well-worn. We may have occasionally worn out, but it's one of the things to do with him or herself.
There is another note that we can read about it.
Right.
This Edward.
Right.
But when it comes down to being this 20-year-old who thinks that her whole life will become real when she finds the man who has the baby who lives in the cottage, that's something she may need to go through before she discovers her, whoever she will be.
Or as she discovers it.
Yes, she did. Well,
yes, okay. Yes. Because, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, the whole point of doing any kind of psychological work is not that it is a head trip, but that it is a heart experience and that you feel it inside of yourself. So you can read the 10,000 books and it doesn't necessarily make any difference unless you work it out in your life and do it in your life and try to figure out, where is this figure inside of me? What is going on inside of myself? How am I going to do it? And taking from those experiences, because I think the example of the 20-year-old is maybe a stage of life that we go through and then we move with it in our life. You had a comment. Yes. Oh, a grandfather clock. Well, it very much might have a patriarchal element to it. Sure, sure. Let me look at it, as well as a couple of things that were said. One, about our partners or the people that we are around who might embody some of the father that we never wanted and some of the father that we might get. And that's a wonderful way to learn about the father, is through anybody that is close to us. And it's always, again, disappointing that they would turn out to be exactly like him, because we marry somebody or are with somebody so that they won't be, ostensibly. But of course, the unconscious is very powerful and will come up. And yet, again, it's a very good way to learn about the father and how we might make him new. Because really, he in a way has to die unless we're going to repeat the generations on and on and on. We don't really want to do that. And the other thing, somebody mentioned about fragmented fathers. But I think the image of father, because of being so absent, can't help but be fragmented. I mean, there's no way to kind of get around that. So we have to kind of take these pieces and put them together for ourselves in a way that is going to make some kind of sense and that would, again, be individual and our own. And we all might think, too, how do we father ourselves? I mean, just kind of keep it in the back of our mind. And how do we do that, actually? What does it entail? As well as, if it's different than what our fathers did for us, what really would it then entail, fathering ourselves? So we might just kind of think about that. And I think, again, that those of you who mentioned you were therapists or interested in therapy, it's really important to get at that idea of father or the father in your dreams or how is he living inside, to build up that kind of image, to pass on something different. And also to be aware of oneself, because every relationship, whether we're therapists or not, has got the transference and countertransference involved in it, every single one. And so we want to be as aware as possible of how we are carrying the father archetype or the father image inside of ourselves. What I wanted to do was give an example of a man and several dreams that he had of the father and how that occurs, or how it works out in analysis. And before I kind of go into him, he, like several of the people that I'm thinking of has experienced an absent father. Now, this particular man's father died when he was about 8. But other, I'll give you men, because we have an example maybe of a woman this afternoon, have not only had the absent father through death, but the absent father through an emotional distance. Or I can't talk to him because he might have been too harsh, or he might have been too much working, or he didn't allow the son to be around him when he was working, or maybe when he came home, he would be working in the sense that he'd be doing the lawn, or doing this, or he was always the doing kind of figure, but didn't really hold on to the boy, or wasn't really emotional with him, or gesturing to him, didn't hug him, told him that he should stop crying at a very early age, told him that he didn't want to hear anything from his mouth, kind of really putting him down in a sense. And what has happened with a lot of these men is that they have then gotten way too close to mother. Way too close. Now, whether it was a setup between mother and father for father to be able to remain distant and away from his own emotions, that might be. But really what has happened to the son, being too close to mother, is that he had to reject and the feminine, but also could not accept father and the masculine, setting up a tremendous kind of conflict inside and manifesting in various different ways. For instance, one man who really, quite late into life, could not decide about his own sexuality. Is he heterosexual? Is he homosexual? Wouldn't know, couldn't try. So what he did was he kept within himself. All the sexual energy was within himself and never could move out into either realm. Or another man who, in trying to get away from too close to mother and too much of a distant father, seems to be kind of a constellation. I don't want to make it in stone, but there's a general kind of thing that goes on. This other man had to have lots of secrets, secret sexual liaisons, always going to bookstores. Now, this man was a college professor, but he was not going to the college bookstores. It did not make any difference how close he was or to whom he was with. There was always this need to separate, always a need to get out. That's what the secrets provided. That's what going to the bookstores was get away from intimacy, partially from not being close to a father, not able to get intimate. And so what did he seek out in the bookstores but a continual image of the masculine? Who is this man? How can I get close to him? But it could only be in an illicit and a dark, kind of shadowy way, had to be a societal edge. Another man, really having, and in the dream, for him, dreams continually about mother, very little about father. And the only one really that contained anything about the father said, "I don't want you," or it didn't say it exactly, but the essence was, "I don't want you to be with anybody. I don't want you to be with men." This was a man who was homosexual. "I don't want you to be with men." So this is the father who's saying this in the dream. What that really meant was, "Don't get close to me. You stay with your mother." This man was really way, way too close to his mother. As an example, when he began analysis, he said his mother gave him baths until he was 11. Pretty late. I said, "My goodness, that's pretty old. Did she touch you inappropriately?" "Oh, no, not at all." I kind of wondered about it. And the next week he came back and he said, "Yes, she did. She did, but I forgot." Right? And so that kind of, he had to forget it and had to really be too close to his mother. And until quite way into middle age, hadn't even realized what was going on in the family. It all had to be kept under these kind of veils of the father was very, very distant and couldn't even get close to him at all, and way too close to mother. And what happens is you have to live in kind of an unreal world, is you can't explore that. And finally he started to, and started to see what was going on. As a result, it was very interesting. He was then able to separate from mother and get closer to his father. It's exactly what he wanted. And he said, oh, I can talk to my father. He's much more accessible. I like having time with him. I make time when I go home to talk to my father, right? Or my father will pick me up at the airport and my mother's not there. Or I'll call and make sure I talk to him, because usually what happens is, who talks on the phone? Mom. And mom says, or dad says, hello, how are you? You want to talk to your mother? Here's the related space, so that the father is really never allowed to be related to. That's kind of generally in this masculine realm what happens when the fathers have been too distant. Now, I must say that for all of these men that I gave as an examples, just these brief examples, are all very accomplished professionally. Very good jobs, very bright, very good in their heads. In their bodies, they're not connected to their bodies, not connected up. Either they have physical problems, some kind of disturbance physically, having difficulties with body image, not connected up, again, on a physical kind of plane, not aware of themselves in relation to other people, not aware as they walk down the street who might be relating to them. So what they're carrying around is this kind of distance, an emotional, a physical distance from people and from themselves. It's getting put out into the world. I think part of it from not being close enough to the father. And you see it also in the dreams. It's interesting to me how many of the dreams are predominant around the mother. And then, I think as you had said, for years here we take care of mother, and then where's the father? Well, he finally will start to come out. And I think the more we talk about him, the more we allow him into our consciousness. And then maybe we learn how to father ourselves. So we take him away from being so far away, always working, not around, encased in some kind of unemotional structure, which is at the damage of him. You know, the fathers would like to be related to their sons and their daughters, I would imagine. But they also didn't learn how to. So maybe it's a matter of everybody teaching everyone else how to do it, coming up with some kinds of different things. Yes.
Many of the examples you gave, the general discussion seem to be ordered. I wonder where the gender difference is.
I think I had said this afternoon I'm going to give an example of a woman with the absent father. But you're asking else.
Let's say the father is absent, not available emotionally. Too close a tie to the mother, and then the make the dynamics of that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that similar to it for a young girl?
I think the manifestations of it, I think it is similar, but the manifestations come out differently. For instance, I don't know, or maybe we should ask that as a question. Go ahead.
You grow into the child that was hoping that the girl recognizes her mother as being self, and the boy recognizes his mother as being other, but then he's identifying closely with her.
Right.
Is it distorting his identity?
Absolutely. It distorts his identity with himself. With her, but really with himself. Absolutely. Yeah.
What bothers me about the example you gave us is that it seems like a huge tragedy, because with the father being distant, he's unavailable emotionally, he's also unavailable emotionally in many cases, like the mother.
Right.
And I think what happens is the mother then attaches relations to the child.
Right.
There's a woman, there's a girl child, a boy child.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting here just feeling a lot of anger towards the mother. That inappropriate touching, bathing around the mother. The damage that the mother inflicted on that child just really bothered me as he told the story. And it may start with the father being unavailable, but it has its tentacle now. And I think that I, as a woman, am horrified with the stories that I hear about how bad mothering produces so much conflict in children. And it's that neediness on the part of a woman who then, ask a young child to be girl, a girl man.
Right, right.
That's not here, but you can take care of
it. Right. You're right. And this kind of tentacles that go out, that's the archetypes. Because, we haven't been able to, and we never can, talk about just one archetype. So one's going to always spill over into the other. So when the mother is, so it's in a way a distortion to say that mother is only bad. She's overdone it with the son in this example, or the examples that I gave, because where was the father? It was like he wasn't there to protect her or to be with her. He didn't protect the son either from her. He should have been relating to her. And, in a sense, I'm glad that you caught the horror or the tragedy of the stories, because it's tragic what really happens. And it happens because the couple has not been able to couple up in a healthy way and deal with their unconscious sides together. And then it is spilled onto the children. So it really is not just that the mom was the bad mother and overly tentacles into the son, but it is, where was the father? Does become, well, he becomes the husband, is who he becomes. Yeah. Right.
Let's just say that the father in the story is a little boy grown up.
That's right.
He has to be gentle.
Right.
He has to be angry.
Right.
And so this is himself from the wife in the story.
Right, exactly. The other thing that happens is that there tends to be a great deal of protection that is built up. Say, for instance, the son to the mother. So the man that I gave as an example, whose mother had bathed him until he was 11, he didn't like my question, did she touch you inappropriately? Because by doing that, I was poking into the image that he had created around her that could not be touched, because he had had to be the husband to her. That was his role. And he was irritated with me for even bothering that, because that meant that he was going to change. So right at the very beginning, he says, as we all do, well, I'm here, but I don't really want to change because it's going to bring up all kinds of stuff. And so many times, not just especially with him, but with others, when I have said things, we all get this reaction of, I don't want to look at that, because it's going to, not only does it change the relationship of the son to the mother, but of course it's going to change the whole family constellation, consciously but unconsciously too. It means, really, that he will grow up. It means he will become an adult. And this example of this particular man, he had told me that a couple of years previously, his mother, he had gone shopping with his mother. Now, the father was there, but not on the shopping expedition, which was curious. And the mother had bought a dress for his mother. I said, you bought a dress for your mother? What kind of a dress did you buy? It was a cocktail dress. I said, a cocktail dress? You mean like a black cocktail dress that's cut out? I kind of went into it a little bit. He said, oh, yes. I said, why did you buy that? Well, she wanted me to. I said, where was your father? Isn't he supposed to be buying those kind of dresses for your mother? Well, father was not around, as he had always been. I said, did you know what was going on? He said, I didn't at the time, but I hear you now. I hear what happened now. But it couldn't, you know, it's like we unconsciously go through and do this. And he didn't even know what was going on. On one level, he did, but how much better he started to feel as he then withdrew from mother and then could start to have a relationship with his father. And by doing that, somehow, that might have changed the mother and father's relationship. So again, we can't talk about just one. It's going to have all kinds of effects on the whole family and the constellation of what's going on. Anybody else have a comment? Okay, so let me give you an example of a man. I'm going to do several dreams of him. And this was a man who I had mentioned a couple of minutes ago. The father had died when he was quite young. He was 8 when his father died. The father had been alcoholic. This was a man who was from England. I saw him when I was in Switzerland. And I mention his English background because here we have, what is the definition of father or of man in the British culture, which is maybe the same or maybe different from our culture here. I think the stereotype of the British man is quite distant, cold, unemotional, not attached person. And his father had been alcoholic, etc. What he said about his father was that he didn't really know him very well because the father wasn't home very much at all. What he did say was his father was not around to initiate him. Now here we come to one of the roles of the father, who is an initiator into life. For him, the initiation process was that happened in his culture in the middle of England was that when you got to be 18 or so, Dad would take you to the pub and introduce you to all of the men at the pub, and that would be in your neighborhood, your surroundings, and would be a route for you. But what if Dad doesn't do that? And what he said was that he really felt he missed out a lot on the initiation rites. So we might say, what are some of the initiation rites that the father does for a son here in America? Maybe there's no pub that Dad takes the son to, but doesn't he maybe sometimes play ball with his son? Or take him, I think at some point, maybe he would take him to work with him. Maybe in some parts of America it might happen. Ball games, right. Drive a tractor, right. Uh-huh. Fishing, right. Tractor car also might be too. Under the hood of the car. Yes, so they learn about the mechanics, right. Or they learn about how to fix the plug in the wall or do this equipment or that kind of thing. Pardon me? Coach Little League. Right. My dad is the coach. It's kind of a teaching. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a tutorial kind of thing, right? The father as the teacher initiating into life, getting the boy out into the world. It's a very important stage. Very, very important. And we don't have it so much. We have bits, but maybe we don't have it as much as we might. You were going to say something? Well, it does happen with an uncle or a grandfather. For this particular man, he said his father had died at 8. I said, well, who was around? What about your uncle? What about your grandfather? Now, because they can do the initiations too. He didn't have anybody. He had no uncle. He had no grandfather. So if there's no uncle or no grandfather, let's think maybe a special teacher at school. He didn't have that either. I give you him as an example because he's an extension, and extensions of what is kind of within the normal brings out maybe more of the tragedy. It allows us to feel it more or get into more what has really happened. So this is why I give him as an example, as we'll see as the story unfolds. So he didn't have any male figure. Mother was left alone after the father died, never remarried. So another initiator could be a stepfather, but there was none. Or maybe an older brother. He had an older sister. Really left out of the world of men. And even though he went to boys' school and did very well in school, no attachments, no friends, no older kids in the class who might have helped him along, no pals on the block who might have done that. Very isolated. And I had mentioned that the lack of the father has a relationship to the body image. And here is the first dream that he had, and we'll hear how it's affected his body image. A robot has a task. He protects something, but he is failing. He cannot even send a last communication saying that he is switching off, but in a junkyard later, he begins to function again. Heavy, huh? He said, now this was just the beginning of an incredible series, the whole time, of very heavy and mostly filled with quite a lot of the archetypal images and archetypal feeling in most of the dreams, and again because of not having a personal relationship. No personal relationship, so the archetype comes in very, very much. He said, of course, the robot was him. And again, the robot has a task to protect, and he has one last communication. So you can imagine, I did ask him if he thought that he was going to kill himself or thought that he was dying, because this robot is into the last little bit. If we might look at this as the beginning dream of the analysis, it does show that there is some life that's going to happen, because at the last sentence, he does begin to function again. Towards the end of the time that I was able to see him, and I was not able to see him long enough because I had to leave Zurich, he had a dream where he had a piece of metal in his hand. And I didn't really know if that metal meant that his whole being was going to be taken over by the robot, or if that was just residual. It's not exactly clear. But again, here we have this, where's the body? What kind of a body image is it with a robot? It's a hard shell. It's not human. Where's the heart? Where's the connection? He's by himself. He's in the junkyard. Well, we could say in the junkyard might be like the alchemical dung heap where the gold lies. Could be that. But it's also lots of metal is usually in the junkyard. Mm-hmm. Anybody have any comment to this dream? Any ideas you might have? Okay. Yes. Go ahead.
There seems to be the element of the junkyard is the disposal center.
Right.
And normally you don't even think of this item. It's kind of a graveyard for things that, for objects,
yes,
that have been used, you know, taken away.
Yes, very much. It also is a place, though, that people might go to get spare parts for their stuff, to rebuild it. It's got both sides. Yes.
It's very interesting that sometimes he himself has switched on again.
He did.
Yeah,
very much.
Because he can switch on at this place, the junkyard, where nobody
Well, he did not expect there to be anything alive. The dream happened, it was, I think, the day after the first session that I saw him. So it was, you know, something got flicked. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't think he expected anything to happen either. Yes?
I thought that this was the dream. I thought the robot was doing this horrible. Because he was not able to
check. Right.
And also because he didn't say goodbye.
Right.
And so that I thought that where there was life coming out of the junkyard, there was some kind of
Right. Yes, you're right. And I, in addition to that, he did not go to his father's funeral. So he did not mourn the loss of his father. You know, part of all that we're talking about, too, is if we leave the old father image, we have to mourn in order to develop something new. Now, he did not actually, by not going to the funeral, father was never really dead somehow, and never really gone, except he was gone, and he was dead. He was told that his father went to heaven, and he was 8. Of course, he knew what had happened, you know. So then he was given even more of a betrayal, because he knew he was being lied to. But I think that one of the tragedies that happens is, and other men have mentioned it, if their fathers have died and they are in their middle age, they do not mourn the father, because men are not supposed to cry. And here we have another initiation time into one's own fatherhood or maleness, which is robbed if one has been told by one's father, don't cry. And then if you don't cry at the death of the father, then what are you doing but perpetuating that father who... And then you can't mourn his death, and then you can't ever let go of him, is also what happens. He will continue on living unconsciously within, or consciously too, because he hasn't been let go of, and the mourning process has not happened. I think it was crucial for this man that he did not get to mourn Dad. Somebody else had a comment. Yes.
So it's funny when you're reading the dream. So the junkyard is a good place for the robot. And he's got to go before he divided his own life.
Right.
And so there's a tragedy that the machine is dying. And I don't think it's so bad if there's a bit of vibration at my heart.
Oh, it can't. It cannot go all at once. What? Oh, well, because he was absolutely ready. Boom. Sometimes it just comes like that because, you know, one is just there and it's essential to work on it. Hmm? I think that's the reason why.
Was he suicidal?
Of course he was suicidal. Sure, he said no, but of course he was suicidal. I mean, this is... Again, if you notice, I mean, a robot is not well connected up with the body. So if you don't have a body, it doesn't make any difference if you kill it.
Was he also risked for other kinds of illness?
You know... Lots of ways. No, he was at risk for compulsions. Compulsions. So his compulsions were, and they varied. They could be alcohol, they could be coffee, they could be sugar, and they also were prostitutes. So he had lots of, it came out, that kind of distance from oneself in a destructive way came out through the compulsions.
With the robotic performance.
Exactly. A repetitive, kind of not thinking kind of performance. Right, right.
That was what I was thinking about being the fact that a robot is programmed. One cannot program, a robot cannot program himself. He is programmed by other means.
Exactly. Now, once again, I had said that the man did not get his initiation into his maleness through his father or through any man then we might say, could it come through the mother? I don't think so. These two gentlemen that I was sitting next to on the plane, the son said he was mad at his father for several years. The father was alcoholic, and until the father got into recovery, he had stayed away from his father until he was about 15. And then he said, I can't stay with my mother. And he found out that his father was sober and was working on himself, and he went to live with his father. So he made that transition from mother as he got to be an adult or closer towards adult maleness and got closer to father, and that's the initiation psychologically into himself. If a man doesn't have that, that makes it very difficult to feel like a man. This man's definition of a man was, now he was a man who was about my height. He was very slim, kind of wiry, very tense kind of feeling around him. You never had a feeling of comfort or ease. It was always very heavy. I would always feel it in my neck, this kind of pressure of heaviness and his kind of wiry energy. His definition of a man was someone who was like Clint Eastwood. This is a man in Switzerland, obviously gone to the Clint Eastwood films. And so a real man is Clint Eastwood, who can fight off two at once. So he's a hulk of a man. He's bigger than life. He's the idealized male figure. And the man's body has got to be really like a bodybuilder, a weightlifter, completely different than himself. I must say the one place that he did have contact with men was through sports. He was a rugby player. So he played with other men there. And I think it gave him a lot. But again, it's, rugby, I think, at least from what he explained to me, it's a very kind of difficult, hard... pardon me? It's very rough. It's lots of contact. Yeah, right. So he really needed the contact with men, but I think feared it also. Okay, let me give you another dream of his. I am with my father and two brothers. And again, the dreams are in sequence, although there were other dreams that interceded.
And that is the end of the tape. Copyright CGU Society, Seattle, and the speaker. All rights reserved. No copying, please.